I've worked with so many people who will say, meditation, it's not for me. Yoga is not for me. When initially, even guiding them through meditation, there's this fear of keeping their eyes closed. Their eyes are open. And it ties into the same point. Like, the body could be a scary place. If you've been stuffing sadness, depression, fear, anxiety into the body and you haven't dealt with those things, of course, the body's going to be a scary place until you clean it up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Suppression and repression. You know, repression is unconscious. Suppression is conscious. We're repressing or suppressing all of that. But that energy didn't go anywhere. You know, it's in the water, in your body, it's in your cell, membrane, and it's waiting to express itself as an explosion. You know, why did that upset you so much? That wasn't even a major thing. Why did you get so upset? Well, it was suppressed energy, and that triggered it, and it came out.
The following is an Operation Podcast production. Welcome, Michael Beckwith. I'm so honored for you to be here. You're a world-renowned spiritual healer. You're a world-renowned spiritual healer and leader and a light for so many people. So we're going to dive in deeply today. I would love to dive into this idea of consciousness and the power of our mind to heal, and also quantum healing, the ability to just really heal and awaken this wisdom within our bodies.
Yeah.
But prior to that, you know, this podcast is all about becoming rooted in our life, rooted in our happiness and our bodies, but also that inner wisdom to heal. And I feel like today we're surrounded by so much information. A lot of people are treating wellness like a checklist. Mm-hmm. They're doing so many things every single day, not even knowing that those are the very things that could be uprooting them from their health. Can you tell me, have you noticed over, you know, in your journey, what are the things that cause you to feel uprooted in your body and in your life?
Well, I think that, as you just indicated, people are inundated with so much information. They're inundated with just so much news. They're inundated with so much that they can become easily hypnotized, brainwashed, seduced, intimidated, provoked. It creates a lot of anxiety. And so they're put in a position to react to all of this information. And they haven't yet stopped long enough to just listen to something that's within them. And I can remember during the lockdown of Healthy People that people were listening to so much stuff, and I was trying to explain to them, there's something within you that if you cut out the static, you can actually be guided intuitively, directly from your soul, as to what's right for you, which may not be right for someone else. Mm-hmm. That what's right for you, what's your next step that you should take, what you should eat, what you should drink. You know, stop listening to your government. Stop listening to all the, they may or may not have your best interests at hand or at heart. And so I think that people are uprooted based on the bombardment. I mean, you think about right now, a child growing up or an adult is getting so much information, so much stimulation in an hour that individuals would take months to get that same amount of stimulation years ago. So it's all coming in. So what is that doing? It's interrupting real thinking. Real thinking is inspiration.
Absolutely.
Real thinking is connection. So it's interrupting all of that. So all of those thoughts, they're energy. They have to do something. What does it become? Anxiety, worry, fear, doubt, worst case scenario projections into the future. The body temple picks up on all of that, creates, through its inner pharmacy, creates all kinds of toxic chemicals.
Yeah.
Then there are symptoms, then there are issues. And so that would be my first movement into your question there.
Do you move into the position of feeling uprooted anymore? Or do you feel like, because you know how to live in your spirit, the triggers that are no longer there anymore?
Not as much. I'm aware of the stuff going on in the world. I'm aware of what's happening, but I'm not, and I realize it's content, but the content is passing through my awareness. So I'm just aware of it, but I'm not allowing it to determine a mood or an attitude or a reaction. I would say 90% of the time, you know, so I can, you know, I did an experiment about a month ago. I was watching something on television. I purposely watched all the commercials. And never do that. I just wanted to just see what people are subjecting themselves to. So I turned on the television and I watched it, and I watched all the commercials. And I realized that this wasn't new information, but I had a visceral awareness that all of those commercials, they were all lies.
Absolutely.
They had nothing to do with reality. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to see what people were digesting. Mm-hmm. You know, it had the music, it had the animated people, and it had the colors, you know.
Yeah.
But everything was an untruth. Mm-hmm. About this is going to be good for you. This is going to be good for your body. This tastes good. It's going to be good for you.
Take this. Drink this. Be this way.
Yes.
And we don't even bat an eye when we see those things anymore. No. Isn't that wild?
No. So it's all content. I just look at the content, mm-hmm. but I don't allow it to come in. And that's from years of training, mm-hmm. you know, of just years of training, so it just doesn't come in. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to allow something out there to determine my opinion. I will look at something. I'll research. I'll study. But ultimately, I'm going to go within.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's the essence of today. To that point, then, you know, a lot of people are looking for ways to become rooted. Are there three things that you would say are, you know, your source for rooting every single day?
Well, you know, there's so many things that one
yeah.
can do.
Yeah.
But I think that when an individual immediately wakes up in the morning, you know, before they get into the day, they have to choose what their day is going to be. That don't wait and see what's going to happen. Actually make a choice. Mm. This is going to be a magnificent day. Everything is going to unfold perfectly. I'm going to get all the information I need to do the task at hand. And so what I do when I wake up, I go into a field of gratitude. I become thankful just that I exist. I'm just grateful that I'm alive. And then I surrender to life. You can call life many names. You can call it the God presence, love, intelligence, beauty, the source of all creation. I don't care what you call it. But I surrender to life, and then I say, I would like to have the strength to handle any assignment that comes into my atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So that's when I first wake up. So I'm not allowing the world to rush in mm-hmm. and determine my attitude. So I become rooted in that. I'm rooted in gratitude. So then from then on, you know, you're kind of guided, you know. And when things come into your atmosphere, mm-hmm. They've come there for a reason. So I get to decide, this is my assignment, what am I going to do with it? Mm-hmm. You know, I see somebody on the street, they're at my door knocking on my window for money, you know, how much am I going to give them? You know, it's all a part of the guidance that's happening. But I like the word rooted and anchored.
Yeah.
Because so many people are uprooted, not anchored in anything, and so they are reacting to circumstances. So they've literally lost their mooring into the magnificent wisdom that's within every single being. You know, I often teach that there aren't any special people. They're just people who have specialized, you know. So if you specialize in stopping, allowing yourself to be grateful and thankful, opening yourself up, sometimes I'll invite people to, you know, just every hour on the hour, just stop, breathe, become grateful, and say something along the lines of, you know, how can I serve today? What's my next move? You know, just it's the pause that refreshes for real. Mm. Take yourself out of everything. And then you start to become more attuned to the fact that you're surrounded by a presence of love and beauty and intelligence. It's not this theory. Mm-hmm. It's not a belief system. It's not a religion. It's not a hypothesis. It's actually a practice.
Absolutely.
It becomes more real to you than the chairs we're sitting on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love hearing the answers to this question because so often, actually the number one question that I get on my first calls, you know, people want to see me as a nutritionist. Mona, tell me, what do I do? Mm-hmm. What do I eat? What supplements do I take? How do I work out? And it's always about doing.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's this shift that needs to be understood, the shift from doing to being in the body.
Yeah,
right?
We are human beings.
Yeah.
not human doings. And it's interesting to note that the moment you step into a state of being, to the best of your ability, and you bless your food, mm-hmm. or you eat it with a sense of gratitude, even if it's not the best thing for you, you change the chemical makeup of the food.
Right.
Just on the, you know, the vibration of the food changes based on your observation, your intention, your gratitude. And so we can go into all the different diets for the different blood types,
right.
Different kinds of people should eat this. We can go through all of that. It probably is beneficial at different times of one's life.
Right.
But if you're rushing down your food and you're not grateful and you're just not chewing and you're just, you know, you're on the rush and you're eating very fast and you're not really eating, you're not really being, then you may be eating the best food in the world, mm-hmm. but is it being digested?
Yeah.
You know, is it being assimilated into the body?
Yeah. Is the state of your body
right.
under stress and tension that it's not even able to work?
It's not even producing any digestive enzymes. It's just producing cortisol and toxicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so being is extremely important. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of navigate and see, okay, what's right for me to eat?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a one-size-fits-all situation. Everybody can't eat the same thing. You know, everything doesn't work for everybody, but something works for everybody.
I want to take a quick break from this episode to thank our amazing sponsors, Bioptimizers. Are you tired of feeling tired? Do you always hit the snooze and then slam your head right back down on the pillow in the morning? With all of the things that you have to take care of at work, at home, with your family and your friends, it is no wonder that you feel so tired. You take care of a lot of different things. So what's the solution? Well, I love to recommend supplementing with a full-spectrum magnesium supplement, and my go-to is Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. Magnesium Breakthrough is an all-natural supplement that helps you reduce fatigue and sleep more peacefully. It even strengthens your muscle and improves your heart and brain function. While most magnesium supplements aren't full-spectrum, Magnesium Breakthrough is the only magnesium supplement on the market that contains the optimal ratio of all 7 essential types of magnesium. Their formula includes cofactor ingredients to multiply the delivery of magnesium to every cell in your body and absorb at a very high rate. Not all formulas do this. Imagine having the strength and the energy to get out of bed every morning and face the day boldly, courageously, to be able to show up as your best self and keep that energy up through the day and into the night. So if you want to feel more energized and get the best night's sleep that you've had in forever, give Magnesium Breakthrough a try. For an exclusive offer, go to buyoptimizers.com/Mona and use promo code Mona, that's M-O-N-A, during checkout to save 10%.
What a beautiful concept, too, to just know that you're following your body's intuition to guide you to what it needs, right? We've almost lost that as a gift, but we're also never taught it, right? We're never taught that we have this capability or intuition within us to guide us. We're always looking exterior to us to guide us, to tell us what to do. When the people who are dictating those things, they don't even know who we are.
Plus, a lot of people that are dictating things have big lobbies that get you to eat and drink certain things.
Yeah.
And under the guise that all of this is going to work for everyone, it may not be. I mean, as you just indicated, people go all through school and they never learn how to deal with their emotions. They never learn, how to detoxify themselves. They don't even learn how to balance a checkbook.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't get the basics,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then they're thrown out into the world,
mm-hmm.
and then they become basically fodder for commercialization and materialism and things of that particular nature. You know,
I always go back to the basics: food and water. What are the things that people have the least amount of education is? Food and water.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. And then you look at the advent of fast foods.
Yeah.
Over the last 20, 30 years, this has very little nutritional value,
mm-hmm.
deep toxicity, and deep chemicals for addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's no wonder that you have 60-70% obesity rate.
Absolutely.
People are just eating this, and they're not even eating it consciously. They're just wolfing it down, so to speak.
You mentioned something very important, and I think it's the power of the pause.
Yeah.
Right? Taking a pause, whether it's to eat, to listen, to digest, to start your day. Do you think that there's a lot of fear that people have in pausing, in stillness?
Absolutely. When one, you know, if a person can be still by themselves, alone, in a room,
mm-hmm.
transformation can take place. However, the people are afraid of it because they're clinging to an identity that they think they are. But when one begins to be still, then things begin to bubble up emotionally that's been suppressed, it's been repressed, and you can begin to see that which is bubbling up is not you, but it's the way you've handled the world. defense mechanisms, coping mechanisms, compulsive behaviors, whatever, if one can be still and be alone and absolutely fall in love with what the source has created, then you can be in the world. You can be in a relationship. Mm-hmm. If you can't sit by yourself and be alone and love this being, you're going to be hell in a relationship because you're going to try to get that happiness from the other person rather than from here.
You'll always be looking.
You'll be looking. So the fear comes from the ego. The ego part of us is protecting this limited personality. It's its job to protect this, to make sure this doesn't die. So the moment you start to venture into the unknown and start to find spaces and places within you that you haven't discovered yet, it's frightening to the ego. Mm-hmm. So it comes up as fear.
Right.
And so people are afraid of that. But if they can sit long enough on a regular basis, they even have to be long periods of time, you eventually begin to see that you are the awareness watching all of this happen. That's not you. That's just content, you know. And then you can break free. You can come out of the matrix. You can actually get free. And it's not as difficult, particularly today, as people would have one believe. You don't have to do 20 lifetimes to do this, you know.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because a lot of people think that it has to be complicated, that it has to take a long time, that they've got to go on a long protocol, but it can happen in the moment, at any time.
At every moment, you can wake up to a part of you.
I love that.
And then if you continue to pause, you start to stabilize those particular insights. You actually are changing your identity. As you were talking to me earlier, you changed your identity from being a sick person. You changed your identity.
Yeah.
And then your body said, yeah, I'm different.
Yeah. And it felt better. Yeah. And the palpitations went away. My frequency completely shifted. Yeah. Yeah, I was sharing with you, there was a lot of power growing up. My dad sharing, you know, philosophy around Vedanta and Vedic texts and stuff like that, you know, who tricked me into going for a jog in the morning, and all of a sudden we would be talking about spirituality and consciousness and
cool
ego. Totally. Didn't seem that way at the time. But yeah, Dad, it felt like a lecture. But now, of course, I've come full circle and I'm finally getting it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking about you yesterday. I was in yoga class, and I feel like we're becoming disconnected or fearful or not even able to concentrate anymore. We're being taught that distraction is a good thing. So even taking something like a yoga practice, right? There's power yoga, acrobatic yoga, loud music yoga. There's always mirrors. We're always looking at ourselves instead of tuning into the body, right? Then I started to think, well, like, wow, there's so many alluring things catching our attention, distracting us from tuning in. And like, you know, what are those things? Meditation boot camps, right? Hardcore dieting. We think about the pollution in our water, in our air, in our food system, where we're not even acting on it right away. Like, those are high red alert things. But, you know, the other things are fake foods, fake news, distraction, preventing us from finding that stillness. And I think about this in the line of work that you do, taking back your mind. I think we're at a point in history where taking back our mind is part of our survival. It's not only a necessity, but it's part of our healing.
It is necessary. And, you know, I like to, when I think about take back your mind, I'm aware that, you know, we have a mind. We're not our mind, but we have one. Just like we have a body. You know, we may have an apartment, we may have a condo, we may have a car, but that's not who we are. So the mind is oftentimes a set of programs that we didn't program ourselves. You know, we were influenced the moment we came out of the womb. Fortunately for you, you were kind of influenced by your dad a little bit.
So
you had something to come back to. Definitely. You know, but we're totally influenced by the world, the consciousness of the world, belief systems. You know, so our mind is already programmed to a degree. So taking it back means that we have one. And we're able to tell the difference between that which is passing through our mind and who we are. We are pure awareness, and we have a mind. So when one makes a choice, the moment you make a choice, like you made a choice in terms of, you know, how you identified yourself. The moment you make a choice, then that begins to narrow the information starts to flow to you. You can be what I call aware of distractions without being distracted by them, mm-hmm. because you've made a choice. Choice is a function of expanded awareness. So when you make a choice, I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to actually be healthy. I'm choosing to be healthy. So now what happens? I start to get information flowing about health. Mm-hmm. A book may fall off the shelf. I may meet somebody. But I'm aware of the distractions that are coming, but I'm not going for those distractions, but I'm aware of them. But the choice itself is creating like a funnel where new thoughts are beginning to come through based on that choice. We all have that. But as you said, the world is full of distractions. You know, in the Zen technology, it's like 1,000 distractions.
Absolutely.
That can pull you off. But you make one choice, you'll start to see life differently through that choice.
I remember really identifying as somebody who is sick, somebody who had to be on medication, someone who was labeled by doctors a certain way. Would you say it can be as simple as even just changing the lens? You know, it's like I took off a pair of glasses. It really was that simple. I just had to look at life completely differently. But again, being conditioned to thinking that something was wrong with me or there's something that I had to heal from, or, you know, going back to the conditioning of our mind, I'm this way. It's how I am. It's all I know. It's how I've grown up. Is it as simple as shifting your lens?
Well, for you, I think you had something to come back to. Mm-hmm. Because your father was inundating you with very, very beautiful things. And we never want to, like blame the victim, so to speak.
Right.
We want to have deep compassion for what anybody is going through. But as they begin to re-identify themselves, a little bit at a time, they'll start to move down a different path. But, yeah, you're changing the lens, beginning to see life differently, you're beginning to see yourself differently, and then you're guided. Mm-hmm. to do things differently based on this different identity. The difficulty with our medical model is labels. Once you label something and someone, they begin to see themselves through that lens.
Yeah.
So when people are going through symptoms, I will share with them, do not put a label on it. Just become aware of it. Okay, there's some pain there, there's some discomfort. Don't immediately let a doctor put a label on that symptom. Just be aware there's a symptom there and just embrace the symptom. Become aware of the symptom. Start to watch it. Start to be aware of it. Don't label it. Don't label it. Don't label it. It will do one of two things. It will begin to dissolve, or it will give you information as to what it is so that you can do something about it. But if you put a label on it, then following that label is going to be some kind of pharmaceutical that you have to take in order to stop that particular symptom. Then there's going to be a side effect to that particular pharmaceutical, and you're going to have more and more and more symptoms. But I just say don't label. You know, was it last year? I don't remember. I had some major dental work done. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do the sleep. I did 8-hour surgery.
Oh, my goodness.
And now I didn't know I even had the opportunity to go to sleep, but I didn't do it. And so I sat there and I went into meditation, and it was very intense. I didn't label anything pain.
Wow.
I labeled it intensity. And so I'm sitting there and I am watching it. And they said, can you go on? I said, yeah, we can go on. So we went approximately 8 hours of deep surgery. And at the end, they were like, we've never seen anything like this. I said, like, what? What are you talking about? They said, we generally break this up into 2 or 3 parts. You did it all in one sitting. But I would not allow myself to label what I was going through painful. Mm. I just said, it's deep sensation.
What a difference.
Yeah. And I just embraced the sensation. I'm not telling anybody to do this.
Of course not. No, you know, I get that.
I'm not. I'm just using this as an example.
Yeah.
You know, that you can sit with whatever's going on. You can be aware of it. Don't label it. Just sit, embrace, breathe. It will give you information. Or since everything is energy, it will begin to become disintegrated. It will dissolve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is what I really want to point out. It's the power of the mind.
Yeah.
And what will happen to your body when the communication is always around a belief system that you are sick or that it is painful or that it is hard. Then all of a sudden, this is where I notice the people that I work with, they get sicker. They start gaining more weight. They start not feeling, you know, optimistic. They start getting more stress and anxiety and worry and tension. And that just like slowly escalates this like accumulation beliefs that are coming from the mind.
Absolutely.
In your work, I'm sure you've met and seen and experienced yourself like the power of the thoughts to really manifest in the body.
Well, a thought is a unit of mental energy. So energy is never created or destroyed. It just transmutes itself. So a particular chronic thought can become a symptom. Hmm. It can become a condition for dis-ease and disharmony. So we have to be mindful of, you know, we have what? How many thoughts do we have in a single day? And how much are repetitive and how much are chronic? That's producing a perception that then produces an experience. Mm. So when we begin to take back our mind, we begin to be aware of all that. I call it thinking-ness. It's not real thought. It's not real thinking. It's mm-hmm. thinking-ness because it's just repetitive. But it's producing experience. So when you begin to declare, decree, choose, affirm, pause, you begin to interrupt mm-hmm. your regular chronic thinking. In the beginning, as we talked about earlier, there's a discomfort because you're used to being a certain way. Mm-hmm. If someone calls you on the phone, you're used to having a certain kind of conversation. You know, somebody spilling the tea about somebody. You know, but as you begin to change, there's a discomfort in yourself because you're becoming new, but there's also a discomfort with other people because they're used to you complaining, or they're used to you bemoaning your fate, or used to you blaming, or used to you gossiping. When that begins to stop, it's like, what happened? You're not the same. You know, so you have to be aware that once you start to identify yourself differently and you start to pause on a regular basis, there's going to be discomfort in you because you're creating a new identity. And there's going to be discomfort in the people around you who are used to you being a certain way. They're depending on you complaining at this precise moment. Oh, there you are.
Yeah.
You know, what are you complaining about today?
Yeah.
You know,
they're expecting it.
They're expecting it. And you play into it. That's your role. Your role, you know, I'm not talking about you personally, obviously, but the person's role, everyone has a role in their relationship. This person complains. This person brings the gossip. This person's enthusiastic. This person's optimistic, you know. But as you start to change, it disrupts that flow of your relations. And you have to be ready for that.
And do you feel like there's evolutions of this awakening? I feel like, you know, a practice that I've been practicing lately is trying to witness my thoughts.
Yes.
And I've noticed, you know, honestly, Michael, I felt like a crazy person. It's like every other thought was either a criticism, a complaint, and not towards anyone externally, all towards myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, you witness the power of your thoughts in your body. If you start to feel like a crazy person because you're criticizing yourself so much.
Yes.
I think that for me now, again, has been like the desire to do more introspection, to understand where the conditioning came from and how long I've been living with it, because no one else has been in here.
Right.
It's just been me stuck with my thoughts.
All those thoughts are living rent-free in your mind, and they're producing relatives and cousins.
Yeah. And I think that in terms of my healing now, I'm finally, my soul, my body is asking for freedom from those thoughts. And not even asking for freedom, finally understanding, well, when did that start? When did you start believing? For me, when did I start believing that I wasn't good enough? When did I start believing that I couldn't do something, that I didn't fit in, that who am I to have a voice in this world? When did I start believing all of those things?
Right. Yeah. Then you can ask that question, but then you have to uproot it. You have to remember moments in your life where you actually felt connected, all needs met, prosperous, healthy, loved, supported. Remember those moments, and that those moments become the moments that you actually meditate on. Because if you go down the track of, you know, when did this negativity happen, the universe will show you, but it'll take you into the database of human consciousness of the sense of separation.
Mm-hmm.
It's endless.
Yeah.
So you can go down this track, and, you know, like if you, this is the dark side of, you know, it's a beautiful high side of therapy and of psychology. It's beautiful to become introspective. The dark side of it is if you keep looking for the genesis of negativity, you can go down a long road.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. So it's you can heal it by actually remembering a moment of coherence, meditating on that. Then what happens is the other stuff does become uprooted. And you may see, this happened when I was 5. Oh, when I was 8, my teacher told me I couldn't sing and to shut up or whatever. You start to remember those things, but you're remembering it in the process of healing rather than thinking you're going to heal by remembering. Because you're not going to heal by remembering, but when you're healing, you will remember. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to remember those moments where there was coherence, seek to stabilize around that. And then the other stuff will bubble up. You'll have all these memories of, as you're saying, you know, oh, that's when I decided I didn't have a voice.
Yeah.
That's when I decided that I wasn't good enough. I was ugly or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And so you want to hit at it from a much more spiritual therapy rather than just traditional. You know, what happened when you were 5?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that just nails it. I really hope that the listeners take away. For me, my greatest healing has always come when I put my spiritual self in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
It wasn't about all the doing and the food and practices and external things. It was when I put my spiritual self into priority, the number one position, right?
Yeah.
And, you know,
I call that comprehensive spiritual living.
Wow.
It's that, you know, it used to be like you had a pie. This is my physical health. This is my nutrition. This is my relationships. This is my spirituality. This is, you know, but actually the whole pie is spirituality.
Absolutely.
And then that affects every part of your life. That when you understand you're a spiritual being first, and we want people to understand we're not talking about religion. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other bag there. Just that you are an eternal, spiritual, constantly evolving being first. And then that affects your relations, it affects your food, it affects your exercise, it affects all the other pieces of the pie. But your spiritual part is not a piece of the pie, it's the pie.
Right.
It's the dough, it's the thing. And then you have all these other places of your life, you know, that are emanating from who you are as a spiritual being. Mm-hmm. And so if a person is an atheist, we would say, of course, that the pie is love, or the pie is peace, or the pie is intelligence. You don't have to use the word God or spirituality. You can take one of these beautiful qualities and say, my life is dedicated to love. Even an atheist will say there's love.
Right.
Or they'll say there's peace, or they'll say there's joy. Mm-hmm. We would say that's all emanations of God. But you don't have to say that. Mm-hmm. You can just say, oh, the big pie is love. And then everything is affected by that context.
It is so good. When you think about anything that could be plaguing you mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, professionally, looking at it from a different lens.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I call it source energy.
Yes, absolutely.
Not knowing where it comes from, but everything looks different and it feels different. Yeah.
Every problem is mental, emotional, psychological, or physical. Every permanent healing is spiritual. If it's to be permanent, it has to come from your real nature that is untouched, unharmed, untainted by human experience. There's something about us that's not touched by time. That's who we are. And so when you pause, when you go into introspection, you're actually coming in contact with that part of you that's untouched by time. And then what happens? It starts to be revealed. And then it starts to affect your body, your mind. It affects everything, the chemicals that are produced in the body temple. It's
you can literally shift the rate at which your heart beats.
Yes.
Right?
The coherence of the brain, the heart rate, everything changes. Mm-hmm. People need to understand that the body's a genius, first of all. And who you are is infinite potential. And you absolutely get to choose. Here's another way of looking at it. If you deal with the quantum reality of superimposition and all of that, nothing exists until you choose it.
Right.
The infinite possibilities. Mm. So most people are waiting to see what happens so they can react to it. But no. Wake up and choose the timeline in which you are fulfilled and happy. Choose that now. Mm-hmm. And then watch everything else galvanize around that.
Such a good point, too, in how you're taking action. Are you taking action to prove that mm-hmm. those thoughts in your mind are right? Mm-hmm. Or are you taking action to prove that your spiritual self comes from this infinite love and source energy so that you can switch tracks?
Absolutely. Because a lot of times people will use the traumas and the hurts as a badge mm-hmm. of what they've survived.
Yeah,
that's just a beginning step. Because ultimately, there's a part of you that hasn't been hurt. And right. that's difficult mm. to hear sometimes.
Wow.
You know?
There's a part of you that hasn't been hurt.
Yes.
That is powerful.
That's the real you. Mm. And so everything is leading to that awareness. You know, this is what I've discovered after all, not discovered, but I've seen it happen over and over again after working with so many people. I remember there was a woman, I'd had this story in one of my books. Mm. And her name was Donna. She doesn't mind me talking about her. But she, we were finishing a class, a practitioner training class. And so I asked the class to raise their hands if they wanted the class to hold them in prayer for anything. And she raised her hand and she said, I want to be moved up on the list to get a kidney transplant. Hmm. That, you know, my kidneys have stopped working and it's a very rare disease. And so I said, well, do you want to try to heal the kidneys you have? And she said, no, the doctor said that it's a rare disease. It could never happen. Yeah. I said, okay. So at that moment, I thought about this story that Alan Watts told many years ago. He said his wife was always late. And so he had to lie to tell her that things started at a particular time so that she'd be on time. But inevitably, she always was late anyway. So one day, he's sitting in Central Park waiting for his wife, and he had told her we're going to have lunch together, but I have an appointment, so you really got to be on time. She was late. So his mind is thinking, oh, my wife disrespects me. She doesn't respect my time. His mind is going crazy.
Yeah.
Then he stopped. He said, my wife loves me. She just has a casual relationship with time. But he said, I can use this time to meditate. Mm. So his wife gave him a lot of time to meditate because she was always late. So that whole story went to my mind.
Yeah.
So I said to Donna, while we're waiting for your kidney transplant, let's try an experiment. She said, okay. So I said to the class, how many people, when you woke up this morning, celebrated the fact that you could pee, that your kidneys were working, and nobody raised their hand? So I said, this is what I want you to do. Mm-hmm. Every time you use the restroom for the next few weeks, celebrate that and pray for Donna. I said, Donna, this is what I want you to do. I gave her something to read, mm-hmm. and the reading was about physical healing. And I said, I want you to read this every single day, and I want you to give thanks for all the other parts of your body that are working. Wow. And give thanks. So anyway, when we met about a month later, she couldn't wait to share. Her kidneys had spontaneously healed,
wow.
regenerated, and the doctors wanted to do surgery to find out what had happened. She didn't let it happen. But that was years ago. Her kidneys are still working.
Incredible.
You know, but she actually shifted her awareness. She focused her attention on what was working in her body. She read and inundated her mind with possibility of healing mm-hmm. by reading stories of people who had been healed. Mm-hmm. We had the whole class praying for her throughout every single day. Every time they went to the restroom, they're praying for Donna. We called it the pee pee prayer. Praying while peeing.
So good. That is so powerful.
I've seen so many, and then it was interesting because right after that, there was a little boy at Agape. He was about 12. His mother's kidneys weren't working, and he comes up and she's standing there. Can you heal my mother? And she said, Reverend Michael. I said, no. And I just touched her. I said, no, this is pray for her. You know, I just touched her. And the son's belief was just so mm-hmm. childlike. And anyway, yeah. her kidneys healed.
Wow.
You know, she came back to Agape a few weeks later. And she said, my kidneys are fine. I said, your little boy, open up the possibility.
Yeah. You know? Why doesn't this make news, right? The more that we can be infiltrated with the belief of these stories that happen, because We know this. We've seen practitioners and doctors. There's been books written about this spontaneous healing. People who have tumors the size of melons and, you know, golf balls that just go away.
You're speaking something because if in fact, you see, we're inundated with the lowest common denominator of the human experience every day. You turn on the news, 90% is the worst thing.
Destruction.
There's a war over here. There's a war over here. This person just got arrested for this. This person shot this person. You know, whatever. Polarization politically, you know. But what if we were inundated with the news every single day, the truces, the remissions, the healings? What if that was a part of the mind, the global mind would change?
What would the world look like?
Yeah. If we were inundated with the best possibilities of everything, you know, we would change.
Every day there is an update. Look at this person in Bali, this person in Connecticut, this person in New York. Yeah. Healed, healed, healed.
Right, absolutely.
More
goodness. But it would not serve the gross national product.
Exactly, yeah. But this comes back to the point, and I'm sure you feel this, there's an awakening now.
Oh my God,
yes. Asking questions. We're just asking more questions. And the more that we can follow the trail, intuitively we know if something feels right or not.
Yeah.
But I think it's on us to continue to ask those questions. And I always say there's a time and a place for medicine, for medication.
Absolutely. It should be integrative.
100%.
Yeah, not either or, it's integrative.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I break my arm, I'm not going to go get some herbs.
100%.
I'm going to get my arm fixed.
Yeah, you might, you know, sit in the waiting room and be led through a guided meditation while you're waiting. That should be the future. Yeah. And, you know, I always say to my kids, you know, mommy was never taught how to love my body. Mm-hmm. Like I was never taught how to love my kidneys or my heart. And so we go through this practice of gratitude sometimes before bed. And I just thought too, when I was a little girl, I was just taught this, you know, going through as, you know, a teenage girl who is constantly not feeling good enough or going through hormonal fluctuations. Like if you were just taught to love your body and what's within during those times, instead of hating your body, resisting what's happening and wanting to change the time, how different the trajectory would be.
Yes. I mean, you think about going through middle school and all the social pressures that people go through at the time. You know, when I was going through school, there was something called citizenship. It was a grade. It was how you helped others, how compassionate you were. You know, I remember that in elementary school. We don't have that anymore. You know, it's like, what if people got awards for actually helping each other rather than putting people down so that people would end up feeling ashamed about how they looked?
Yeah.
And the other point that you were talking about, the awakening that's happening, you can see it. Because if you go back 20, 30 years ago, a lot of the things we're talking about now was woo-woo.
Yeah.
Why are those people sitting there with their eyes closed? You know, they must be from India.
Yeah.
You know, what are they doing? Now, with the advent of epigenetics and quantum science and brainwave, you know, technology, it's all proven that that which used to be woo-woo was actually real and authentic. But all of that's a part of the conversation now.
Yeah.
Before
it
was like, you know, weird people did the hippies.
Yeah.
And weird people did this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like
factual.
Law of attraction, meditation, resonance. It's all a part of the conversation now, which portends a leap, an evolutionary leap for us. And right on time.
Right on time. Yeah. It's funny, 10 years ago, I used to say that I help shift people's vibration from imbalance to balance.
Yeah.
Shift the vibration first, and then I'll tell you what to eat. But I'll never forget, people would look at me like, vibration? What?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
what
right.
is this word? Right now, it's like, oh, I get it. It's the vibe. What's your vibe? Right?
Yes.
And they're
yes.
owning it.
I remember I used to teach all the time, we were vibrational beings, but that was like new years ago.
Now what does that mean?
Part of the language. Mm-hmm. You're a vibrational being. You're not just flesh and blood. You know, you're a divine energy that's conscious of itself.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
And people would just look. I believe what he's saying, but I have no idea what he's talking about.
So for people who are inspired by this and, you know, there's a concept of understanding what you're saying versus living it, how does one begin to witness their thoughts and not buy into the story?
Mm-hmm. Exactly what you're saying. I would tell people to sit obviously. The moment you close your eyes, as soon as you just close your eyes, you start to produce more alpha waves. Just closing your eyes, you know, you start to move into a more creative frequency. And you can start by doing a little experiment. I can say, okay, become conscious of your left knee. And you can just bring your attention right there, and you'll notice the sensation on your left knee. Now, go to your right ear. So you're actually noticing that you can place your attention anywhere you want. Now, become aware of what's flowing through your mind. What thoughts are flowing through your mind? Don't judge, don't resist, don't enhance, just look. And you can begin to watch what's happening in your mindscape. Now what happens is, there comes a moment where you realize you are the watcher, you're not the content. The metaphor, the analogy that I use sometimes is you think about the ocean. Ocean's primarily water. It's H2O, has some salt in it, it has some other things. And then there's content. Plankton, there's seaweed, there's human pollution, there are boats, there's all kinds of things in the ocean. But that's not the ocean. That's the content. The ocean is the ocean. So we're pure awareness, and then we have content. And part of that content is generated by our personality. So what happens is, if you sit and watch and observe with intention to grow, you're able to tell the difference between the content and your awareness. That's called awakening. Once I can tell the difference between that which is flowing through my mind and that which is my awareness, that's called I'm awakening. So, ooh, that's an interesting thought. Like you were saying earlier, ooh, that's a depreciating thought. Oh, yeah. That's a critical thought. Oh, that's a beautiful thought. What's watching? Pure awareness is watching. So once I get that, now choice is a function of expanded awareness. There's reaction and there's choice. So now that I'm aware that I am awareness, I can now choose. I choose to be happy. I'm not choosing to be happy when that happens out there, when I get my ducks in a row. I'm choosing to be happy right now. Matter of fact, I'm choosing to be healthy.
Yeah.
I'm choosing to be in joy. Now what happens? The universe starts to respond to that choice, and situations, circumstances, conditions begin to change based on my vibration, based on my frequency, based on my choice. So, as you said earlier, I'm putting my spiritual self in the driver's seat. And then the world starts to change. You see, we have that much power. But what if we all did it together? You know, we could change the world.
Change our reality.
Change our reality. Change. That's why we call it the world of appearances. Because it appears and disappears based on our belief. You see.
What are some other components of this concept of the mind? Like, if we really want to take back our mind, what are key components of that philosophy?
You want to begin to ask, I'm talking to you, what I call empowering questions. Your life experience is often determined by the questions you're living in. So many people live in the question of what's wrong, who's to blame, why me, why is this always happening? Or you can live in a higher question. What good is present? What good is here that I presently can't see? This presence is omni, it's omnipresent. So what good is here that I presently can't see? What gift is this experience birthing in me? What power is trying to be released by the experience I'm growing through? How can I contribute more to the world? So if you take a question and just live in that question, by law, by universal law, the universe will answer that question. So you move from a disempowering question, what's wrong, who's to blame, to what good is here that I presently cannot see? What gift is trying to happen through me? What would it feel like? What would happen to me if I was totally prosperous? Ooh, that's a great question. What would happen to me if all of my needs were met? The universe will start showing you. and then like breadcrumbs start leading you to being that person.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
If you're not asking the questions, then you're looking for evidence for what you believe. So if you believe that there's lack, if you believe that there's scarcity, if you believe that there's sickness or illness,
right,
you're constantly looking for validation of that to be your truth.
That is what the personality does. It's trying to prove its limited existence. And so we say to people who are looking for proof, we say something like, the lack of evidence isn't the evidence of lack. You know what I mean? Because we're inviting people to go beyond the sensorium, the five senses, and to realize that there's a spiritual sense, spiritual faculties that need to be activated. This is why you stop and pause. This is why you pray. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're activating a sense that in many people is dormant, because they're living only in the five senses.
Right.
Only in three dimensions. They're dimensionally challenged. Mm. You know, there's so many dimensions. Why would you just live in three? You know, you got this big house, but you're only living in one room.
Such a good analogy. My goodness. You talked about this concept of, you know, the spiritual journey. And I think that a lot of people with the conditioning that we have today, they want to arrive. I want to be there.
Yeah.
I want to know what the answer is right now.
Yeah.
Right? They want it to just unfold, unveil in the moment.
Yeah.
Would you say that, you know, following the breadcrumbs, you have to be a willing participant then with God or universe in this process?
I tell people that you are a participant, not an anticipant.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not anticipating something.
Right.
You're actually participating in it. What does that mean? You have the feeling tone that it's already done, yet it's unfolding. Mm. So it's a feeling that it's already happening, yet it's unfolding. So if you take a seed of any rose, avocado, whatever, the energy and the information of that particular seed, it's already done in the seed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's already in there.
Yeah.
It's already done.
It's inevitable.
But you put it in the right soil, it unfolds. That which is already done then unfolds.
Right.
Manifests, becomes visible. So we have to have the feeling that it's already done. We're participating in that feeling, and then it unfolds. Mm-hmm. It will literally compel you into right speech and right action.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be moved sometimes to do something illogical, but that's the new you taking a different stand, walking home a different direction, so that the new you can show up. But it's already done, you see. So that's to me is participation. I'm participating in the feeling that it's already done, yet it's becoming visible, yet it is unfolding, you see. It's a dance. It's a sweet dance. You get off track, you come back. You get off track, you come back. You get off track, you come. You just keep coming back.
Right.
To the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling provides the healing. The feeling provides the revealing and the healing of that which is already within you.
Yeah. I just think, you know, nature doesn't stop when there's an obstruction.
No.
Right? It heals itself.
Yeah.
It knows what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cut yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't heal that.
Right.
You just take the dirt out.
Mm-hmm.
And the body does the rest. So we're taking the static and the dirt out so that which is pure is unblocked.
Becoming conscious of the thoughts that are in the mind that are convincing you otherwise.
Yes, you become aware of them. You're, you know, in science it's called the observer effect, that whatever you observe, you change on a subatomic level just based on observation.
Mm.
So a watch pot does take longer to boil because you're watching it, you know. So if you observe those thoughts, they change. They will actually speed up based on observation.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't resist or try to enhance, you just watch. Oh, that's an interesting thought. Hmm. It's not true, but it's interesting. You know, just observing.
Right.
You know, it's like you're examining your life.
Can we make a distinction then with that and being on the path of betterment?
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I started questioning, you know, when I think about the motivation behind, you know, going to the gym and eating well and something, you know, just this idea of becoming better. Mm-hmm. And I started questioning, well, does this come from growing up with, you know, Hinduism? Is it religion that taught me that I always have to become better if I'm going to become one with God, if I'm going to be a better mom, a better partner, a better citizen, whatever it is? The focus then on becoming better means that I'm never completely happy and living in the now.
That can happen, yeah. I think that being better or self-improvement and all of that, yeah, that's a byproduct, mm-hmm, of you coming to an understanding of who you are.
Right.
So oftentimes motivation and being better, it's good for people at different stages of their development, but it's always pushing them into the future of one day I'm going to be perfect. You see, but it's actually, there's something, it's not about perfection, it's about just continued unfoldment, continued progress, but feeling that you've already arrived. You have to feel a deep sense of self-love and appreciation. Mm. And then that deep sense of self-love and appreciation, it will inform your choices. You know, you love yourself, you know, here's some candy, here's some broccoli. You know what I mean?
You're not going to the drive-thru. Yeah. You're going to love yourself.
Yeah. I'm probably going to eat something that's more healthy. Yeah. You know, my choices are going to be different based on self-love and appreciation rather than an addiction. Yeah. But a lot of times people are trying to get somewhere in the future.
Yeah.
And then when they get there, they're not happy. They've checked off all the boxes.
Yeah.
They've done all the accomplishments. They've got the awards. But they forgot themselves. Mm-hmm. So you have to get yourself. You have to have an insight and a realization of your oneness with the life and the self-love and appreciation. And then when you look back, it looks like self-improvement. Mm-hmm. But what it really is that you have eliminated, mm-hmm, the obstacles and the hindrances and the false beliefs. You can't add anything to yourself. What can you add that the source hasn't already given you? You can't add.
Yeah.
All you're doing is, all spiritual growth is removing,
right,
something,
right,
that's in the way.
Hmm.
So it looks like you've improved, but you've actually removed, hmm, obstructions and beliefs and points of view so that you can come forward.
Hmm.
That which was blocking, you know, if you clean out all the pollution in the ocean, you didn't improve the ocean.
Right.
You just remove the pollution. So the same way, we didn't improve ourselves. We just remove the pollution that says, I'm not good enough. I'm unworthy. Mm-hmm. I'll never be good enough. We just remove the pollution. And then, here we are. Ooh.
Here we are.
Ooh.
Ooh, exhale. Ooh.
And then the thing about it is, you start to have more compassion for other people.
Right.
Because the lack of the hypercriticalness of ourselves translates into a greater judgment of others, because, mm-hmm, we keep meeting ourselves and other people.
Mm.
But when we like ourselves, we notice that we meet that part of ourselves and other people too. We may not like everything that this person does, but we have less judgment.
Yeah.
Why? We're not judging ourselves.
I've worked with so many people who will say, meditation, it's not for me. Yoga is not for me. When, you know, initially, even guiding them through meditation, there's this fear of keeping their eyes closed, mm-hmm, right? Their eyes are open. And it ties into the same point. Like, the body could be a scary place. If you've been stuffing sadness, depression, fear, anxiety into the body and you haven't dealt with those things, of course, the body's going to be a scary place until you clean it up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Suppression and repression. You know, repression is unconscious, suppression is conscious. We're repressing or suppressing all of that, but that energy didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the water in your body, it's in your cell membrane, it's waiting to express itself, mm-hmm, as an explosion. You know, why did that upset you so much? That wasn't even a major thing. Why'd you get so upset? Well, it was suppressed energy, and that triggered it, and it came out. You know, and that anger came out and was way over the top of something that happened. You know what I mean? Or it can come out as a symptom in the body, or it can come out as a sabotage. Somebody's entrepreneurial, they're having some kind of business, and then, mm-hmm, it comes out as a blockage in the prosperity. It's gonna show up.
Yeah.
The energy doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when one begins to clean themselves up without judgment, it's not like I'm a bad person, it's not that. You're just cleaning yourself up. everything starts to flow better. You have good inner feng shui, you know.
And what a beautiful shift in perspective, because then you're no longer fearing going inside. You're saying, if I work through these things, if I awaken what that is, what's on the other side?
Absolutely.
Who am I on the other side of those things?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, you go into a cluttered room, which I'm in the process of uncluttering. You know, what's on the other side of that? It's a beautiful room. It's like, it's going to be pristine. Yeah, it's already there. I just have to remove the clutter. It's going to be a beautiful room. So it's within us. We unclutter all that stuff without judgment, without beating ourselves up about it. What's there? Beauty. Love.
So how would you say then, how do those thoughts, unserving thoughts and frequencies, how do those manifest as physical symptoms in the body?
Yeah, well, pretty much it shows up as dis-ease in the body, and it shows up as symptoms. Remember, this everything transmutes. Just like that water can become a gas or can become ice, but it's not going to dissipate. It's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to transmute from one to another. So our thoughts are transmuting constantly from mental energy to emotion to perception to experience and symptoms of the body or symptoms of the mind. So that's how it happens. So again, through choice, through observation, you can actually change that. That's why I call it take back your mind. Don't just let the world run away with it.
Yeah.
You know, take it back. It's yours. It's your mind. It's not society's mind. It's not the government's mind. It's yours. Mm-hmm. Take it back. Mm-hmm. You see? And then watch your body change. Watch your mental body change. Watch your emotional body change. Watch all the subtle bodies begin to come in alignment with the celestial body, which is perfect because you've eliminated the static off the line. Mm-hmm. So what we don't want to do, we don't want people to start blaming themselves for disease or symptoms. It's not about blame. It's just awareness.
Right.
You know, it's no blame. It's no, you did a bad thing. It's your fault. You're sick. No. It's none of that. Yeah. It's just becoming aware so that you can change.
Mm-hmm. So if the body's in that coherence of peace, something that I often work with my clients on is understanding, some people call it core value or core longing. Mm-hmm. And this year especially, when I help guide them towards this core longing, the word that comes up is what they're seeking is peace, the feeling of peace in the body.
Yeah.
And so I think about, well, what's the opposite of peace? It is, you know, turbulence. It is being out of harmony. And so if you think about the type of body, whatever your goals are, whatever you want to achieve, if you're operating life from feeling like you're out of peace, and you're living in this inharmonious way, but you're not taking ownership of your own ability to be able to change, right? So I just want to own in on the fact that, you know, you said something really powerful, which is, you know, taking your control back once and for all. And I think that people are watching to see how other people are doing it. Like, show me, is that possible? Like, you're telling me that it's possible? They're looking for more evidence around them to see that is something that's real. Like, can healing be that easy?
Yeah. It's. I wouldn't say easy, but I'd say simple.
Right.
You know, it's not complicated, but you actually have to put in the work, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, I define peace as the dynamic of harmonizing good. So it's actually a dynamic within us that radiates out, like love, like joy. And that peace has very little to do with external circumstances. Most people think that I will be peaceful when something else is okay in my life. No. You could actually find the peace and radiate it. Like I'll teach people, before you walk into a room sometimes, ask yourself, what do I want to meet when I go into this meeting? I like to meet peace and harmony. Okay, so you tap into it and you walk into the room with it. The highest vibration always wins.
Right.
So you actually start to affect the room with that peace rather than waiting to see if it's going to be peaceful. You bring the peace in there. We have that kind of authority, you see.
You make it sound so simple, and it is. I hear you.
Yeah.
It's this power of intention.
Intention is, you know, so many people live from an intention deficit disorder.
Right.
They don't have any intention. Right. They wake up and they just go into the world. No intention.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to walk out of my house.
I'm too busy.
Without an intention.
Yeah.
You know, even if I just stop before I go out of the house and take a breath. This is going to be a good day. You know, it's going to be wonderful. I'm going to be at Mona today. It's going to be sweet. It's going to be wonderful. I'm in the car. I see you in the hallway. I know you, you know. So,
yeah.
So we start talking already.
Yeah.
You know, just beautiful, you know.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I really want people to hear that, because I think that the reason why people are yearning for peace so much right now is that we've never had more access to, you know, to what you were saying before, the world is showing us horror and fear and sadness. And for the empaths listening, we go to social media and we see children dying and we take it on like it's happening in the here and the now, like we can feel the wave of grief. And so this is shifting to gratitude. You know, we know that if we are the ones who are going to go out and change our world, how do we maintain a sense of gratitude when there's so much sadness and horror happening?
Yeah, gratitude and deliberate kindness and deliberate compassion are practices, because it is difficult. Or I say, put it like this, it is challenging. You know, like you just mentioned, there are people dying, there are kids being killed, there's all kinds of things happening. And so oftentimes we feel guilty if we can touch gratitude, because we're saying, well, who am I to be grateful when I'm seeing these people dying? Well, you know, but it's actually the opposite. Who are you not to feel that? If you're going to change the world, you have to add a different vibration to the world. The world, there's a difference between the planet and the world. The planet is Mother Earth. Rainforests, oceans, rivers, lakes, mountain ranges, deserts. She's alive. The world is the condensation of beliefs, opinions, points of view, perceptions, positionalities that has condensed itself into a worldview. It's malleable. It's always changing. So the world and the planet are not the same. The world is vibration. The planet is Mother Earth. So if you inject into the world peace, love, compassion, gratitude, you are changing the vibration of the world. So instead of feeling guilty about being grateful, even though you're seeing calamity, you're actually being a practitioner of gratitude and of love. You have no idea how you're changing the world.
Yeah.
By being grateful, by being thankful, by being compassionate, being kind. And when I say kind, I'm not talking about being nice. I was sharing with the people at Agape, I wanted them to put on their to-do list deliberate kindness, like at 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 8 o'clock, whatever.
Wow.
Just put on their deliberate kindness. So whoever you're with at that time, do something kind.
Ah, so beautiful.
So that it becomes a part of your muscle. You know, even if you're in disagreement with somebody, you have a different opinion about something, do something kind. Let the mind go on a hunt to figure out what kind thing can I do for this person.
Yeah,
I'm changing the world with kindness, love, and peace. So we like to think, okay, all these negative things are happening. I can't make a difference. Who am I, just little one person?
Yeah.
There's a war over here. There's a war over here. There's a war in Congo as well. We're all connected quantumly. No one is separate from each other. So if I lift my vibration, I'm not denying what's happening. It's not a denial. I'm lifting my vibration. I am literally, figuratively, spiritually changing the world. Now, two of us are doing it. It's amplified. If eight of us are doing that, everybody listening to this podcast, we all stop in this moment and feel a deep sense of gratitude, a deep sense of peace. We're magnifying that all around the globe, you see. And so we don't want to, particularly empaths, we don't want to feel that we're not making a difference.
Yeah.
We are making a difference. And now you could actually measure with the scientific technology, you can measure the field that's emanating from your heart.
Yeah.
You can measure your auric field.
Yeah.
You can measure how you're affecting the world where the five senses can't even see it. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, this conversation, somebody may have just decided, you know, I was about to do something bad, but for some reason, I'm not going to do it now. I wonder why.
Yeah.
They may have been affected by what we're talking about right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
We don't even know them.
There's coherence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important that we really do start taking control, as we've talked about, with our mind. But also in something as little as social media, mm-hmm. right? Who we're following. I know for myself, I will go to your page mm-hmm. as an exhale. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I went from all the scariness to...
I won't put anything on there that is not not just optimistic, but informative as yeah. to how we can yeah. grow. I'm not going to get caught up in the stuff that people get caught up in talking about each other and putting haters, you know,
yeah.
in some way the internet has become a hatosphere.
Yeah, and there's this level of activism, right? Like you want to be of service, so you feel like you want to be an activist. And I think that it's great to take on activism in terms of a point of an educator to bring mm-hmm. it to light. But I have a feeling we've kind of laughed a little bit about it. In this lifetime, we might not beat these systems. The big food, the big mm-hmm. pharma, the ones that are making these choices around mm-hmm. policies and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But what we can do is inspire action, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. I think that if it's inspired action that comes from a sense of feeling ease.
Connectedness.
Feeling connected.
You know, you're really speaking the truth here, because there's nothing more frustrated than a frustrated burnout activist. Because oftentimes an activist, and I believe in activism, I've come from an activist family, mm-hmm. But if you're working constantly against something, you'll get burnt out. You have to work for something. But it's, and you have to actually be the vibration of what you're working for. So if you're working for peace, you actually have to feel peace. If you're working for love, you actually feel that. I can remember, I work closely with the King family. You know, and Dr. King's eldest daughter was a member of Agape, and now I work closely with his eldest son and his granddaughter. You know, I'm like her mentor. And one of the things that was when they were was very integrated into the civil rights movement, when they were boycotting and they were they wouldn't allow people to be on the front lines if they could not love the so-called enemy.
Wow.
So they had trainings. And Jeez. If they would call you names, and if you reacted to that, you worked in the office. Wow. So that the people that were actually walking the streets for voting rights and all of these things, they were people who were vibrating at the level of peace, the level of love. Of course, they didn't like being called names. Mm-hmm. They didn't like being be the object of violence. However, they were actually living into the answer of the world they wanted to live in. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes people are being activists, which I applaud. I applaud it. You have to, you know, but are you the answer? Are you the vibrational frequency of the world you want to live in? That's the inner work that we have to do.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And I think if we're really going to make change, I think it's really understanding if we can look at those people, like I'm in such awe. You know, when I'm feeling the darkness, when I look to people like you who can still lead and be a leader, leading with love and gratitude and seeing the beauty in life, right? We need more reflections like that. And I think that we need to take it on us to be that reflection also.
Yes.
Right.
And everyone can grow into that. I think the other thing that's beautiful about our time is that all of this has been decentralized. Mm-hmm. We don't need like one focal leader.
Right.
Here. All this information is all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember I used to tell kids years ago, I would say, you know, there's a place where you can go and you can get all the information about everything. They say, where? I say, the library. You know, now we can just say, you know, you can actually go on the internet and actually get all this information.
Yeah.
You know, so all this information is everywhere. But we're now at the stage where it's like, okay, we have the information, but are we practicing it?
Yes.
We have to embody it. Mm-hmm. So everybody, wherever they are, can be a leader. I always say, I'm not here to get followers. I don't want followers. I want to activate leaders.
Yeah.
I want everyone to lead where they are. Mm-hmm. If you're a plumber, if you're a painter, if you're an artist, you're a singer, whatever you are, be a leader in your field and emanate with these transcendent yet immanent qualities.
Yeah. So if listeners are hearing this and, you know, they wake up and it's one of those days, they're hearing this, they're saying, okay, I choose to be intentional. I choose to see the gifts and the beauty in this world. Mm-hmm. Can you take us through a simple affirmation or simple meditation on what they can say to themselves in the morning?
And when they go to bed at night.
And when they go to bed at night.
Because those are magical times. Mm. When you're going to sleep at night and you're starting to get sleepy, you go into the hypnagogic state. The subconscious mind can be very easily impressed. When you wake up and you're not quite awake yet, you're in a hypnagogic state in between sleep and awake. You can actually say things that will penetrate beyond before your conscious mind can block it. And so you may want to say something like, I'm so grateful that I am now living in the timeline of being totally fulfilled, prosperous, creative, and totally healthy. I am so grateful that I'm living in the vibrational timeline of being totally fulfilled, prosperous, healthy. All of my needs are met. Mm-hmm. You can just live into that feeling. Now, what's happening? We live in a field of infinite possibilities. They don't exist until we choose the possibility. So we are choosing this possibility. I'm living. I'm grateful that I'm now living in the vibrational timeline of being totally fulfilled, prosperous, healthy. All of my needs are met. Mm. I'm living my Dharma. So in that moment, oh, I can see the light everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm already living in it. Mm-hmm. Because it exists. Infinite possibilities exist, but it's not activated until I choose it. Mm-hmm. You see? So we just choose it, and then what happens? It starts to guide us.
Even feeling all of my needs are met.
Yeah.
All of my needs are met.
Yes.
There's a knowingness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on our power.
Yeah, the scarcity mindset blows up.
Yeah,
I live in a field of abundance, and then my thought, my words, my actions become an expression of that.
The next evolution for me, I feel, is in this world of quantum healing.
Yeah.
Can you share, what are your thoughts on the body's ability to manifest health and health optimization?
The body temple is constantly seeking a state of homeostasis. It's always trying to clean out the debris and the pollution, mm-hmm. so that it can digest and assimilate not only the food and the drink, but also our thoughts. So I tell people to say, mm-hmm. my body can heal anything. It's true, the body can heal anything. I've seen too many examples of people given the death sentence. Mm. They have 3 weeks to live, they have a month, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And when they change their mind,
yeah.
my body can heal anything and then do the inner work, whatever that is. I was working with a woman who had, they told me she had 3 weeks to live. She had a deep sense of abandonment issue. Her dad had left. It was a whole bunch of stuff. And we got in, we worked with that till she felt connected to the presence that would never abandon her. Mm. We did some nutritional things as well.
Yeah.
Her body had regenerated. She was in a cancer group, a support group of 7 women. She was the only one that survived.
Wow.
You know, and she had survival guilt that we had to work through for a while. But I literally saw this 78-pound girl, bald, turn into the most beautiful woman she could possibly be. She got that her body could heal anything. You know, she had stage 4 cancer. And that's not the only one.
Of course.
But yeah, this is what we have to be aware of. There is a spiritual body that is perfect. It's a real body. And it is to manifest through the physical body. Okay? So imagine, we don't like to think that this presence is far away.
Right.
It's right here. So imagine that right above you is your super soulful self, your real self. Just imagine it's right above you. It's your real self. And it's trying to manifest through this physical body. So instead of thinking I'm going to pray to God out there, I'm actually embracing my super soul self. And I'm giving it permission to come through and ask me right now. It's right here. It's right now. I'm at one with it. And this body can heal anything.
I could cry. And I feel like the tears are... The tears come when your soul is saying yes.
Yes.
And this is something recently for me growing up, again, going back to religion, but God was always outside of us, somewhere else. Even thinking about the concept of higher self.
Yes.
Universe. Mm-hmm. It was never God within.
Yes.
I had to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And now, just recently, it's like, no. It's here.
It's right here.
This intelligence is here.
Yes. We have to expand our capacity to hold more of this energy. It's already here. Mm-hmm. It's like a battery, or it's like a coil, or a light bulb. There's some light bulbs that are like 30 watts, some are 60,000. Mm-hmm. You get the big, lights that they have at premieres and things like that. But all of those light bulbs have a greater capacity to hold what? The energy is infinite.
Right.
So we're surrounded by infinite energy. The inner work that we're doing is expanding our capacity to hold more of it. You see? Mm-hmm. So again, we're not improving, we're expanding the capacity to hold more of this energy. And so I invite people just to understand who you really are. Mm-hmm. It's magnificence, and it's just, it wants, it's like this is the avatar. It wants to express through us as us right now. Mm-hmm. Take it on. Take on how powerful you are, how magnificent. Not from an ego point of view, just life. Life wants to express through you. Love, peace, joy, it wants to express through you. Give it. So when you're surrendering, you're not surrendering to God out there. You are surrendering to the next stage of your own unfolding. Mm-hmm. The same way that a caterpillar is surrendering to a butterfly. The same way that a rose seed is surrendering to a rose. You're surrendering to your next stage. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I got to do sound effects. I get the energy starts to roll.
But it literally feels like it just makes sense. You turn the light on within your body.
Right.
And then you see the way, and it makes sense, and your body can heal.
The body electric.
Do you have a practice every day where you're manifesting your health, visualizing your health, speaking to yourselves?
I do. You know, I meditate every day, and I establish intention every day, and then different days may bring me different ways by which I approach it based on what's happening in the day, based on what I'm doing. But, you know, I shared my basic waking up with gratitude and surrendering to life and inviting greater capacity to handle whatever comes into my orbit. And then I have warm water with lemon and minerals, and then I make a special tea with some herbs, and then I go work out. Then I come back and I have my smoothie that I make with my own green stuff that I created. And then I eat lunch later. But before I leave the house, I have moments of just meditation, it's just a rhythm. It's like when people ask me what I do, I have to look at it because it's so a part of me.
I was just going to say, tell it's become you.
It's just who, it's like you wake up, you brush your teeth, you take a shower, you do certain things. But I tell people, you want to take an inner shower as well, You don't want to go out into the world and not take an inner shower and have those people meet all of the unresolved issues. You want them to meet you. And so if you just become still, you don't have to meditate for 2 hours. You can build up to that if you want.
You can
just stop. Just be still. Have an intention to be a greater version of yourself. put a smile on your face to activate tonic chemicals. You start with 5 minutes. Don't leave home without it. Spiritual Express.
Spiritual Express. I love that so much. You know, we think about these buzzwords around longevity and health span and everything. Something tells me that you're not obsessing over your diet.
No, I don't. I mean, I choose to eat a certain way.
Yeah.
But I call it, I call myself? A flexitarian.
Yeah, same with me.
You know, it's like I'm pretty much vegan. Mm-hmm. Because I had experiences when I first woke up years ago, in my 20s, I was eating some chicken and I could feel the pain of the chicken. I was hypersensitive. I could feel it. So I stopped eating meat. And then later on, I became aware of the pollution, and then I became aware of the environment. You know, there was different things that took me down that track. So today, I'm pretty much plant-based.
Yeah.
But if, in fact, I'm going to pick up and eat something that's not totally plant-based, I'm not going to beat myself about it. I know I'm going to transmute it. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Know? And I don't push things on people. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone needs to be guided to what's appropriate for them. And what may be appropriate for you now, you may grow 6 months from now or a year from now into something else that's more appropriate. Because food is frequency. Mm-hmm. You know, food is vibration.
Yeah.
And so you want to get clean food that has a high vibration, that doesn't have a lot of density, so that you can be clear, you know. So I don't eat a lot of food, you know. I'm not obsessing about eating.
Right.
You know, and sometimes, you know, my people around me will make sure I eat.
Yeah.
You know, if you're eating lunch today, no, okay, we're giving you lunch. You know, I said, okay.
You're really that high on life.
You know, that early days of Agape, I would fast so much.
Right.
And I was really thin. I'm still thin now, but back in those days, I was like 122 pounds.
Wow.
122, 124, sometimes 127. Mm. And one day I ruptured my tendon playing basketball. It was a freak accident, and it got me back in my body. So then I used to be an athlete. I ran track and things like that, and so I got back in my body and started regenerating my body, and I started being more conscious of the body, because I was so in this expanded realm. I wasn't really conscious of the body. So now I'm very conscious of the body. I give it good stuff, good nutrition. I exercise it. I walk it, you know, like a pet.
You get one vessel.
So I take care of it. But I'm not obsessing.
You're strong. I've seen you work out with Sean Stevenson.
Oh, yeah. I like strength.
Yeah.
You know, I like to be strong. I like to be flexible.
Yeah.
And I like to be able to do what I can do what I do. I mean, I do 3 services every Sunday at Agape, and then I'll do a number of teachings during the week. Then I'll travel and do a workshop over here. I'll fly to this country and teach over here. You know, so I want to be strong enough to to answer the call of what I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about vanity.
Yeah.
It's just it's about availability to energy that I can use to teach and to love my family and, you know.
I'm so happy you touched on that, because we've talked so much about the energy in the external world. And growing up at the ashram, we would always say, like, food is energy. It's a frequency that you're putting into your body. So be aware of what that frequency is and learn how it nourishes you and how it makes you feel, right?
Yeah, a lot of people know about the octane for their gas, for their car, but they don't know about what they're putting in their mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
That you might have to detox. Mm-hmm. You know, so So I'm not going to put things in my mouth that, you know, it's going to keep me from doing my mission. Mm-hmm. And if I do, I don't beat myself up. So I'm going to try a little bit of this.
Yeah.
I like that little vegan brownie. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to eat 5 of them.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
you brought up another amazing point, and then we'll take you through some closing questions. You know, considering that in this season, your body might need some different nutrients, right? There's so many people, I know we've all been in this diet world, we think that we need to find the way to eat. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, one of my missions is just to look at nature, remind people to look at nature. Mm-hmm. And the source of food that nature gives us changes within the seasons, mm-hmm. depending on where you live, what the climate is. And I think that when we look at the intelligence that exists within nature, it provides our bodies with the intelligence that it needs to thrive and feel its best.
Absolutely. Was there a question in there?
No, it just, I love that you tied into that, because it's so, people look to latch on to one thing instead of honoring the fact that there might be a shift or an evolution.
Absolutely. In the summertime, as a kid, I loved summer, but I still get excited with all these fruits that come out.
Right.
That sometimes aren't available. You know, now you can get fruits from all over the world, mm-hmm. but you know, I like to eat local, you know.
Yeah.
So when summertime hits, I love all the colors of all these different fruits. You know, I love papaya, I love mango, you know, I love pineapple, I love all these fruits, and I'll eat them, mm-hmm. and I'll also put them in my smoothies as well.
Yeah.
And I love vegetables, I love, you know, the broccoli, I love the spinach, I love, you know, it's my tongue, and I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, I love it.
Yeah. Before we started, you know, we're talking a little bit about Ayurveda, the power of Ayurveda. Was there something that inspired you to go to Eastern medicine?
At one point, I was eating what I thought was very healthy, and I had some mucus in my chest. Mm. And so a friend of mine said, well, Dr. Naram's in town, you know, he wants to meet you, he knows about agape, and he works with the Dalai Lama, and, you know, I said, sure. So I met with him, and he put his fingers on my pulse, and he said, you eat bananas? I said, yeah, I put them in my smoothies every day. He said, nope. They're not good for you.
Here's the mucus.
The next, I stopped putting bananas in my smoothie. The mucus was gone within 2 days. You know, he said it wasn't for me. But I was eating a banana every day.
Right.
Now I just use avocados in my smoothie. Avocados, blueberries, strawberries sometimes, and then my own green drink and things like that. But that got me into it. Mm-hmm. So now when I go to India, I see, you know, his wife, Dr. Naram, and her son, who's now following in the lineage of
beautiful.
It. Yeah, you know, he's gone to medical school and Ayurvedic school, so he's very intelligent guy. And
genius.
And so she'll come and she'll just say, oh, you're doing good. Okay, oh, yeah, you have a little skin issue on your back. Let me give you some of this, you know.
Incredible.
Yeah.
We have to keep that wisdom alive.
Absolutely.
Today.
And they're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to meet them.
They're about to teach me some things to use.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for some rapid-fire questions as we close things off?
There's more?
There's more. Last few, I promise. What are the most common mistakes or misconceptions that you're seeing people make with their health?
Common mistakes. They get into a sense of futility, mm-hmm. that what they have can't be healed, or they place all their authority onto what is called the MD, you know? They'll put all their authority there and not really do their own research, their own examination, and work on themselves. So we sometimes, you know, I like integrative medicine, so I don't put down medical doctors, but sometimes we call them minor deities, MDs, because they carry a strong authority for people.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure your doctor believes that you can be healthy.
It should be your partner in healing.
Yeah, so when they have that white coat on and they tell you something, they want to tell you, oh, yeah, problems like this can be solved.
Mm-hmm. You know? Don't give away your power.
Don't give away your power. Yeah.
What is one way that people are making healing and health too complicated?
Healing, the word healing actually spiritually means it's a revelation of wholeness. So they make it too complicated by thinking that there's something about them that's, let me put it this way, there's something about us that's already whole. Mm. And we have to pay our attention there. Oftentimes, our attention is on the dis-ease, but not on the wholeness. For instance, when I worked with this woman with the kidney issue, I made her attention go on the parts of her body that were healthy. And then we call it shape-shifting. vibrational shape-shifting, and then shift that energy to the part that is diseased. So we're all energy.
Right.
So she had a very strong heart. So she would concentrate on her heart, feel the power of her heart, take that energy, bring it to her kidneys. Mm-hmm. So she had a healing. Beautiful. So I think individuals are living in a field of impossibility rather than possibility.
Yeah. What is your favorite ancient healing remedy?
I like Manuka honey.
Same.
And lemon.
Yeah.
And turmeric. Oregano. I like those when things are a little bit out of balance.
What is, let's say, if you had to pick something about modern medicine that excites you, what would it be?
I like the new technology that's coming out that balances your vagus nerve. You can actually sit in the machine, and it balances your parasympathetic system and the vagus nerve, so your body is released of tension and anxiousness and anxiety, so it heals faster. There's a wonderful place in Texas. There's something called SOAK, S-O-A-A-K. SOAK, matter of fact, that's a wonderful technology of frequency. It heals through frequency. It's not just binaural beats. It's actually clinically tested frequencies that bring your body into a state of coherence.
Incredible.
They can just look it up. They can just say, referred by Beckwith, you know.
Okay, I'm on that. What are the top three things that we can start doing right now to optimize our health naturally, from your perspective?
Oh, okay. Hydrate with good water. Do a little research around it, because everybody says they have good water. Mm-hmm. You know, do a little research around it, so you make sure you're having good water. And I would say, like what I do, I drink warm water in the morning, not cold. Mm-hmm. Warm water. I have lemon. I have minerals. And sometimes I have zeolite in there to clean out the heavy metals that we may be breathing in. So that's good. Make sure that you are having some high proportion of living vegetables and fruits in your body. Stay away from processed, fake, hyper-processed food. The body doesn't see it as food, and what happens is the body will attack it with your white cells, thinking that it's not food. Eventually, it will give up, and you will won't be able to digest it, so your pancreas will have to produce more enzymes, and you end up having other issues. I know I'm probably getting too complicated here.
No, that's good, though. Yes, 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 to all of that. I agree.
So hydration, a good vibrationally, nutritionally dense food, and move the body.
Yes.
You know, people walk their dog. Mm-hmm. So look at people who walk their pet, walk your body.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You just walk your block. If you just walk around the block for 20 minutes, your killer cells increase dramatically.
Absolutely.
You don't have to go into the gym and sweat. Mm-hmm. You can just walk around the block.
Walk.
Take a walk. take a peace walk.
If you could leave our listeners with just one takeaway that you're most passionate about right now, what would it be?
I want people to know how powerful they are, and the power of intention, and being in wrapping your attention around your intention would change the trajectory of your life. It will seem like magic, but it's not magic. Is actually you stepping into a field that already exists for you, but you've made yourself available. Have an intention, wrap your attention around it, choose it, and then watch everything come into a level of coherence around it.
So beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your energy today. I can say, I understood before, but now being in your presence, when you tap into your body and your spirit, the fact that energy is limitless.
Limitless.
Yeah, I feel that from you. Yeah. Like, you've really reflected that. And I just want to say thank you so much, because I think what you're doing is you're asking people, reminding us that we simply have to remember who we are. It's not about becoming somebody else or working or forcing to be someone else. It's simply remembering who we are.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that. What
you're
a gift.
Remembering.
Thank you. It's been such
Mona, thank
an honor.
You for the invitation.
Yeah. I'd love to have you back one day. God bless you. Yep. Thank you.